Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Brandon, does Lacey Evans have to change the name of her finisher?
You know, I heard them call that out, and I wasn't even thinking about it. And then it was either McAfee or Cole who said, you know, hit her with a women's right. And I was just like, oh, man. This is not good. I mean, you know, you kind of watch a show like this, hoping to kind of be removed for a couple hours, and then there it is. It just literally, I mean, or figuratively, actually hits you in the face.
quite the day. Buckle up, everybody, because this is a big day in history. But we, as you say, people tune into wrestling to not necessarily be reminded of current events. Although, while escapes are necessary, it's also important to keep your eye on what's going on in the world and educate yourself and vote. Everybody, no matter what political persuasion you have voted, it really will make a difference. And vote for someone who has a chance to win. Fight early for who you want on that ballot on the final election day in the season, but then vote for someone who can win, because a lot of that makes a huge difference. Because as a lot of people are learning today, there is a lot on the line when you throw a fit over not getting perfection and don't keep in mind the big issues that can manifest 6 years later, and that's what we're seeing here. But like I said, you know, and some people are celebrating, but even Justice Roberts is like, if you read his concurrence, it's a bit of a dissent, given the whiplash over how far this went. I don't think a lot of conservatives even were thinking it would go as far as it has, and how quickly you know, people are getting blocked from procedures in certain states already. So anyway,
it's certainly a very interesting situation here, given that obviously in Maine it is currently still a protected right. However, we are of course home to Susan Collins, who is getting plenty of backlash over this. So yeah,
is she concerned? What adjective has she used today, or has she not spoken?
She said something. She didn't use that word, probably because she's aware of the connotation at this point. Yeah. But you know, it sort of falls on deaf ears.
Yeah. It is on her as much as a lot of people. But anyway, we'll pivot here and talk about what happened on SmackDown tonight. A kind of a strange journey Sheamus and Drew McIntyre took to make it into the Money in the Bank match. They fought to a double countout. Adam Pearce seemed completely perplexed over how to solve this. You know, I think people were thinking, how about a rematch? But he took a weird route and gave them both a spot in Money in the Bank, even though neither won, although neither lost. And then Paul Heyman didn't like that Sheamus and Drew were in the match, because they'd be able to cash in against Reigns after a last man standing match victory over Lesnar that Heyman is predicting at SummerSlam. So he tried to, he negotiated with upper management a chance to eliminate Sheamus and Drew from Money in the Bank. So basically the way it boiled down is Pierce removed Drew and Sheamus from Money in the Bank, and then they had to re-earn their way into the match by beating the Usos if they could get along long enough to do so. And Drew and Sheamus didn't get along the whole match, but ultimately got along enough and defeated the Usos relatively clean to advance into Money in the Bank. So they were in at the beginning of the night, and now they're back in again. Brandon, what have you thought of the story so far coming up to tonight, and then what they did tonight? And I throw a little caveat that it's a creative way to come up with a main event with a really shallow roster that has some stakes. And I think sometimes, you know, if they didn't have all this TV rights money and all this, it's such a shallow roster, but so much revenue coming in from TV, they'd probably be doing other things, but given the situation they're in with a shallow roster, they're sitting around going, how do we come up with a high-stakes creative main event each week? And it doesn't always get a high score on the logic scale. There was some logic to this. I think it was more last week that it lacked logic. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly sacrificed the credibility of Adam Pearce to try to get through what they wanted to do in the last few weeks. I mean, like you mentioned earlier, it was pretty clear from the get-go that the obvious situation is to pit McIntyre against Sheamus in a rematch to see who advances. And instead, they just both get in for no real clear reason, which of course leads us to this odd decision tonight to pull them both from the match, which, I mean, very clearly from the beginning of the night, you could kind of see as a way to get a main event on a show that, like you said, is very much lacking roster depth and lacking star power without Roman Reigns appearing on a weekly basis. So they needed something with stakes, and they got it, I guess, with this match, even though it really never seemed like the finish was in doubt. Ultimately, we ended the night the same place that we started it. I thought that it was a fine match for what it was, and I was a little taken aback by how naturally Sheamus sort of slid into the more babyface role by the end of the night. I mean, when they won that match, there was really no semblance left of Sheamus as a heel. I mean, he celebrated with McIntyre. They sort of exchanged looks of respect. It was pretty clear that they didn't want them going at it in any way at the end of the show. But I do expect, obviously, that Sheamus will just remain as his role as a heel next week. So, I mean, it's a fine way to get through an episode of SmackDown, I suppose. But it's messy. I mean, it's certainly not the tip top creative for what they could be doing on this show by any means.
I've been an advocate for Sheamus to be a babyface. I think had they protected Sheamus more, I think we saw, and you pointed out a glimpse tonight of, I think, where he is among WWE fans. A few years ago, he was looked at as, oh, he's the guy who tells those dumb stories about his family back home, and he's bland, and he was overpushed at the beginning, and we're sick of him, or whatever the pushback was on him. He and Drew McIntyre have just had so many good matches. I think they were two of the MVPs of the Thunderdome and era. And his promos have gotten better. And I just think he's sort of, sometimes you just stay around long enough and you just continue to deliver good matches. I'm not saying great matches all the time from him, but you know when Sheamus comes to the ring, you're going to get a good hard-hitting match, and I think people respect that. And I think 6 months ago, 9 months ago, they could have put him on a course to be eligible and believable as a substitute SummerSlam main event opponent for Reigns that could have given WWE the luxury of waiting on Brock and not having a hot shot him in when Orton went down. WWE doesn't really seem to concentrate on backup plans for this kind of thing or depth. And so, this is what we got. And I mean, when you keep a roster as shallow as they do, despite record revenues coming in, they just sort of position people where they think they need them. But yeah, and it's not too late, but I think it would have been, for whatever reason, I think it would have been easier 6-9 months ago to put Sheamus on that course than now. But it's still not too late, and he's still young enough. I think that course is there for him, and this was a window into it. I don't think fans, Brandon, would be reticent to cheer Sheamus if he was positioned against a heel that they didn't like.
No, I think that they could still make it work. I've long been an advocate for Sheamus in prominent roles, although I do find for some reason that when he is thrust into the main event scene, people do tend to reject it or at least, stick their nose up to it. And I don't know if that's just the way that it comes off, the way that they book it when they put him in that role, but they also haven't really tried it with him as a babyface. I know that he had what was it, back in like 2012 or so, he had a run as a babyface over on SmackDown, but that was when that show was very, very much the B show, and there wasn't really much focus on it at all. So it's hard for me to knock that too strongly. But I'm thinking back to like 2015 when he has the feud with Roman Reigns that just goes really, really poorly. So it's been tough to kind of gauge how fans are going to react to Sheamus when he's in a main event role. But as an upper mid-card guy, I've always really enjoyed his work. And I think he is someone that you can kind of move in and out as long as you don't make him a focal piece. And yeah, I think tonight was sort of a window into that. And honestly, it would be a nice, you know, break from the sort of the jokey character that comes along with Ridge Holland and Butch. I mean, like, It's a shame for Pete Dunne, who is just so supremely talented, but it brings the Sheamus character down to have Butch in there, because it's so hokey and over the top and unbelievable. I mean, that this guy just has nothing. He has nothing to say, and he has no self-restraint to a point of parody.
All right, well, let's pause and introduce the show and then shift to some calls and emails and more conversation about tonight's episode. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, June 24th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the founder, editor, publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter, which then led to the PWTorch.com website, which then led to a lot of PW Torch podcasts over the last, nearly 20 years now since we've been doing started doing podcasts. And this is one of them, and we appreciate you joining us today, either live streaming the show or downloading it or streaming it off our website. So thank you for doing that. If you haven't yet, subscribe. Search Wade Keller on your podcast app. That's Wade Keller. And you'll see a red logo and a blue logo. Red logos are our post shows. Blue logos are our regular podcasts. We've got new content each week on feeds, plus some great flashbacks. We've got a really good 90-minute plus Matt Hardy interview from 10 years ago this month, going up tomorrow. He talks about wrestling injured and the reality that if wrestlers had sat out when they were injured to the degree that they'd be benched or sat out in regular sports, there'd be almost no wrestling matches anymore. And he talked about some of the mistakes that he made, and also talked, I don't know how to frame it, but he talked about Jeff Hardy's recovery and road back to stability with his family. And, 10 years later, it's in a tough situation. But much more. So hope you'll download that on our Blue Logo Show. Good interview from 10 years ago with Matt Hardy coming up. But tonight we're here to talk SmackDown. And the other voice you've heard so far is Brandon LeClaire. He is a PWTorch.com subscriber. Used to cover SmackDown on Friday nights. Now he is a pay-per-view reporter for PWTorch.com. Brandon, great to have you back.
Yeah, glad to be here. It has been a bit since I've done a SmackDown. I've been on Raw duty for quite a while, it seems. So yeah, it's nice to cover the show that I originally started the Torch with, which has now been, man, like well over 3 years, which seems crazy.
Wow. Yeah. Well, what do you think of the state of SmackDown compared to Raw? As someone who covered SmackDown but has been co-hosting the post-Raw shows with me, what do you think? Kind of compare the two shows right now. How are they similar? How are they different than in the past?
Yeah, I mean, when I was covering SmackDown, I certainly felt like it was the stronger show. It was certainly the one that I was glad that I was covering versus covering Raw, not just because Raw had the additional hour, making the coverage a little bit more daunting, but just because I thought it was an all-around better show. And for the most part, I really enjoyed most of my time covering that. I was actually enjoying the product. I think that has certainly changed, especially with Roman Reigns becoming more and more of a part-time guy. I think on a weekly basis, I was just looking forward so much to seeing Reigns and seeing what was the next step for that character, that the lack of that has really brought my overall enjoyment of that show down significantly. Raw, on the other hand, I feel like has gotten better. It's still not a show that I love, and it's still a show that if I'm not, for example, covering for PW Torch in some way, that I will find ways to cut down the runtime. I mean, there's almost always something on Raw that I feel like I can skip, but it does feel far more noteworthy than it did a couple of years ago, and for the most part, more noteworthy than SmackDown. It seems like after the last draft, they certainly move more talent in that direction, and generally speaking, week to week, I find myself more interested in Raw than SmackDown, especially once Cody Rhodes showed up, which, of course, now things are a little different with him on the shelf. Everything, both shows are really suffering because of the lack of depth combined with the injuries.
All right, well, let's get to phone calls. If you're listening live and want to join us, the number to call is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And push 1 on your keypad when you call. If you want to be on the show, that'll flag you on our switchboard. Another option is to email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Tonight's show not generating a ton of feedback, a lower level than usual, which is an opening for people who do not want to wait on the phone lines and want to be sure their voice gets heard. Because maybe some of you are watching the Stanley Cup Finals or some of the news channels trying to reconcile what's going on. Oh, by the way, Susan Collins said she felt misled. She feels misled.
That was a phrase.
That's an opening for you if you do want to give us a call. But we do have some callers, and we will begin taking those in about 3 seconds. 1, 2, 3. Okay, here we go. Sean from Murfreesboro, welcome. Good to talk to you tonight. What do you think of SmackDown?
Wade, it's always good to talk to you. Brandon, it's good to talk to you again, man. How are you doing, sir?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. Definitely sticking to wrestling. Like I said, you guys were good to say what you said, but I'm definitely going to try to stick to wrestling because, like I said, that's what we're here
to talk about.
And I, you know, again, we just want to love people, folks. Regardless of what you feel, just love people and listen to them and just be open. That's all I have to say for that because I think we all need to do that. We all need to. That's for everyone. But going back to what you guys were saying about Drew and Sheamus and all that, like as bad as that part was, I just didn't like the fact that they always go back to the, can Drew and Sheamus coexist? And it's like, why did they always have to go back to them in a tag team if they can coexist? Like, obviously they're going to end up coexisting in the match because they want to be in Money in the Bank. But they just, you know, the back and forth stuff, it's hurt Drew more and more, I think, the more they're going along with him. And, you know, if Sheamus turns babyface, like, later on, I think it'd be fine because I'm into Sheamus right now. I like what he's been doing, but just that part, I didn't like it either. And Pierce, it did look like just a goofball altogether in that. But I wanted to ask you guys about the new Viking Raiders look. I will say I like that the Viking Raiders are turning heel because I think they do need if they're going to come back, and if WWE is going to do anything with them, I think they need to have some kind of edge and do something other than the stupid, you know, bang their arms against their chest like they always do. And I think I'm pessimistic because I know what WWE does, but I'm optimistic that they gave them a little bit of an edge tonight. And I like the angle was going wrong at first with the New Day dance stuff. And I was like, oh God, like, please no. Like, this is horrible. Stop with the Shanky dancing. And then it made it relevant with that whole angle. What did you guys think of the Viking Raiders and how they were portrayed tonight?
Sure, yeah. Start, Brandon, with the Viking Raiders and their new look and becoming heels and Michael Cole saying, these aren't the Viking Raiders I remember.
Yeah, I think Cole had to throw that in because otherwise it would have come off pretty ridiculous. I mean, they were treated like jobbers adjacent over on Raw. I mean, the last time I recall seeing them was where they, you know, were kind of getting picked apart by Omos. So it hasn't been a great run for the Viking Raiders up to this point, which is unfortunate because I think both guys are super talented. I think that they work exceptionally well together as a team. And there's always something to be said for tag teams that gel together really well and have a really good handle on their partner's body language and sort of the double team moves that they can put together. And I always thought that the Viking Raiders were particularly good at that. So it's always been sort of a bummer that they couldn't get things going on the main roster. And part of that is because of the gimmick. And part of that is just because WWE doesn't really care all that much about their tag teams. I'm definitely pessimistic in the sense that I worry that this is going to be a 2 to 3 week thing before they get bored and they just end up wallowing in the lower mid card again like they were before. The one caveat and the one sort of hope that I have for this is that the tag team titles appear to be more important to WWE than they have been at any point in maybe the last like 15 years. And it may even be more than that. I mean, we may be getting closer to, I mean, you could probably make the argument that they're as important now as they're the most important they've been since maybe like the SmackDown 6 era. And the reason for that is because with Roman Reigns out and those titles unified, they need something to lead SmackDown, and it's been the Usos and the Undisputed Tag Titles. And of course their feud with Riddle and Randy Orton prior to Orton's injury. So the tag titles have really been amplified in the last couple of months, and they're going to need credible challengers for whoever's holding those titles if they stay at that point on the card.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, the WWE's attempts to remake wrestlers after they define them down puts them in a tough spot. I think going away for a while and coming back and then, you know, cutting a promo as the Raiders did, saying they're tired of being overlooked. It's like, well, you know, you guys weren't winning a lot. But I remember the car karaoke. You guys seemed to be having a jolly good time, not taking your careers very seriously. I guess it's a net positive for me that they're heels and, you know, being vicious and have a little bit of an edge to them. I mean, I think that's a better use of them than what they were doing. But I guess I'd like to see a more sophisticated way of going about this than they disappear and then come back and just explain in a soundbite that they're different people now. I think people will buy more that they are to be taken seriously if we see more of a story in front of our eyes of a transition of their ferociousness or their attitudes or their dedication, you know, whether they're going face to heel or heel to face. You know, I think it works both ways. WWE gets kind of lazy about that, sometimes doesn't do a formal turn. And I'd like to see more of an explanation for that. But it's not that all's well that ends well, but they're in a better position now than they were, you know, a few months ago in this role. And one of the keys is just cut promos that feel a little more authentic and less scripted and cartoonish, and then have matches that back up being, you know, ferocious, threatening, dangerous heels as best you can within the WWE ring style, and they'll be okay. And it's, you know, a couple healthy bodies who have worked their way through the system who are going to get some ring time on TV, and WWE just frankly needs that right now. Sean, I think you asked about one other thing that we might not have covered.
No, that was it. And I like, Wade, what you said about, you know, them not winning a lot. And that's why they were overlooked. Like, nobody cared about them because they didn't. And that's what was, I think, annoying to me as a fan, because they're good in the ring. They're not good on the mic. They're not good talking. They sound cartoonish. And they sound dumb. But, like, in the ring, they're really good. They're really talented. So if they can get some wins, and because obviously the Usos are heels. I mean, they can't really do much with them right now. So they'd have to. Either Usos would have to lose the titles or have a dumb story that who are we going to root for, the Viking Raiders or the Usos? And obviously you're going to – I guess you would root more for the Usos just because they're more well-liked. People like them more. But, I mean, you're not supposed to root for them right now. So I don't know. It's interesting to see what they'll do. I mean, I'm not very – I'm like you, the guys, but I'm pessimistic on what they'll actually do with them wholeheartedly. But I was going to ask you, too, what percentage chance do you think that next week we will actually finally see the maximum male models and see what they have in line? Because I just feel like they do a lot of this where they'll say it's going to come that week and then they push it to the next week and they do something dumb. Like, what are the, you know, it's like, do you think they'll actually go through the next week? And are we finally going to get this thing of who these models actually are, who these people are? Cause it's just kind of getting lame. They keep pushing it back so far. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I think there's some history of it not paying off, other times where it drags on too long, other times where it builds anticipation. Where are we on that right now, Brandon?
I'm in the position of what are we doing with this? I mean, like, what is the end game here?
Yeah.
I mean, why are you bringing male models to a wrestling show, and what is their purpose going to be? I mean, it just doesn't add up. I guess I guess I'm trying to decipher if this is some sort of way to call up some additional guys to put around LA Knight, or if this is just some sort of strange gimmick where he has a bunch of they hire a bunch of extras for the day or local wrestlers that they bring in, and it's sort of a week to week thing, like what was his name? Adam. Oh man, wait.
Give us a clue. Give us a clue.
Any of the guys recently who have had like locals, like the Dancing Bunny.
I'm still not sure.
Oh man, the bunny, the
Bad Bunny.
No. The guy in the bunny suit.
In what skit? Why I draw a blank?
No, he was on the roster. Like he was a guy on the roster, and he had dancers that came to the ring with him.
Oh, Adam Rose.
Yes, there we go. Thank you.
Oh, of course.
Sorry.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank
All
you,
right.
Sean.
Yeah, Adam Rose, yes,
sorry.
Thank you.
I wasn't going back quite that far in my brain. So
So is it going to be something like Adam Rose where Dupree comes to the ring every week with a parade of sort of local wrestlers or people that they, just extras that they hire in. And these are his quote unquote models and they help him win matches. Is that what they're going for? Or are they more trying to introduce like a weekly group of wrestlers who are going to accompany him to the ring and actually be involved in the gimmick in a larger way? I haven't quite pinpointed that.
My assumption, and I could be wrong, is he's going to be a manager who occasionally wrestles. Maybe an MVP type, situation. And he's going to have Scotty Riggs and Buff Bagwell type tag team. There's going to be a faction of guys who look like, Chippendale dancers or something cheesy like that. I mean, he comes across as a manager who's going to bring in some models, and it's going to be like Spirit Squad, kind of a goofy lower card gimmick to get laughs and heat.
And is it going to do either?
I mean, if they brought in two to do that, it doesn't mean they will.
Right,
do that.
Right.
This is Vince McMahon we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I mean, it's not taking up a ton of TV time right now. I guess it doesn't bother me all that much. I was never a huge advocate of LA Knight. I mean, he's fine. I thought some of the work he did in NXT was okay. But I don't really see him as much more than a lower card guy on the main roster. So I guess it doesn't hurt anything, but I'm not particularly invested one way or the other.
Yeah. Sean, anything else you want to bring up?
I'll say I'm with you guys. I'm not into this angle either. I didn't like the show. I will say I didn't care for the show tonight either. I thought it was pretty lame, honestly, for a good Friday night. Going back to, I wanted to ask you, the last thing I was going to bring up was the Natalia Ronda segment. Like I said, when Natalia first came out, I have to say I did chuckle. I did chuckle. I thought that was, whatever. It was what it was. I didn't. But then it was just the more it happened, the more I was just, I don't know how this is going to sell me on the match other than, she's like, well, I don't know. Everything they said to me, I was just like, it just seemed forced, and I just didn't care for really any of it. I don't know. Ronda, the more she's on on SmackDown, I love what she, when she has matches, like they're really good. I think the Ronda Natalya match at Money in the Bank will be good. For what it is, I think it'll be really good. I don't think it'll be great, but I think Natty's a good worker. I think it'll be fine. But I did not like this segment at all. So I want to hear your guys' thoughts on that. And Wade, Brandon, I appreciate all you guys did. Oh, no, go ahead. Sorry. You have some?
No, I was ready to transition to Brandon.
No, but I thank you guys for all you do, and appreciate all you do for the Torch, and you guys have so much stuff up, and I just love what you guys do for wrestling, and I appreciate it, and thank you guys for always taking the call.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. Good to hear from you again. Brandon, tell me that you think I got a bad haircut.
Did you?
No, just say, wait, you got your haircut. You got a bad haircut.
Wait,
how much? You didn't pay for that haircut. Say you didn't pay for that haircut, did you?
Wait, you didn't pay for that haircut.
You deserve to be an orphan. You're fat. You're ugly. You smell. I hope your sister is run over by a bus. Okay, Natalia goes out there, dresses up as Rhonda, which is funny. Brings a baby carriage to the ring, which pops me. It's hilarious because Rhonda talks incessantly about motherhood like she's the only one. Not since Cody and Brandy made such a big deal of their gender reveal, which, by the way, I stand by. I think it has a 67% chance of being the turning point in fans turning on Cody, was making a big fuss about the gender reveal on Dynamite. Just match up crowd reactions to him. Of course, he exacerbated it with many other things, and I know that's quarter one material in pro wrestling podcasting, but so be it. But Rhonda has talked incessantly about being a mom and how special she feels because of it. And motherhood's great. Fatherhood is great. If you want to be a father or mother, great. But when you're a professional fighter and you just are going on and on about it, and there's plenty of other people who are parents and don't go on and on about it. You know, I think there was a passing reference to Kyle O'Reilly, you know, recently. He doesn't come out and talk about it constantly to get, as a babyface especially. So Natalia pokes some fun, and in a way that's heelish. Like, hey, you know, it rings true a little bit, but you don't have to be snotty about it. So I'm on Rhonda's side on this. Okay, I'm laughing, but I'm like, yeah, you know, come on. She's excited to be a mom. Yeah, she has a little too much, but you don't have to rub it in. Rhonda comes out, and oh, my God. I was like, I hope this was approved by Natalia ahead of time. I've heard, you know, they get along, so I don't think, like, this was some – but I was worried this was a, quote, practical joke, like shoving someone into the swimming pool for laughs, like Vince McMahon said, is the funniest thing that can happen in the world. I was worried this was like some unscripted roasting of Natalia to try to break her down in the ring. Because, I mean, Rhonda at first said, hey, Natty, that's you? I almost didn't recognize you without your rack out. Okay, that was funny. But then she says, oh, I'm not going to pass up having kids to avoid missing a day of work for 10 years. It's like, whoa, that's kind of personal. And then she goes, I'm also not going to mutilate my body chasing impossible industry body standards like you do. And I'm like, what? And then she says, yeah, you are a heart, and you do work hard, so you've earned something. But you're so lacking in natural talent and charisma. So despite your unrivaled pedigree and work ethic,
that right there was the
you
kicker for me.
You will never get to be a main eventer in WWE, so you had to dress up like me. Nice jacket. Yeah. So, Brandon, am I overreacting to this, or did Rhonda just like you're like, what? What? No, what? Like, it was just like, settle down, Rhonda. Anyway, out of proportion.
So I felt like this was coming because they've been going at each other like this on Twitter for a couple of weeks now. It's just been personal jab after personal jab after personal jab, and most of Rhonda's digs at Natalia involve her looks and her breast implants. So I assumed that would be the direction that Rhonda would take. The only thing that I can think of, the reason that they're so comfortable doing this is because, I mean, unless something has changed, I was under the impression that Rhonda and Natalia were very, very close outside the ring. I do remember that when Rhonda first got to WWE, that Natty was one of the people most heavily involved in training her, and they became very close. So I assume that's still the case, and I guess maybe they just agreed together that, like, gloves are off, everything and anything is fair game, but I don't know. I mean, maybe they've ruined a friendship over this. I'm not sure. But, yeah, this felt like a very, very harsh and brash attempt at making this feud personal at the last minute when really I don't know that anybody's asking for that. I think it's just a B-level feud for a pay-per-view that doesn't need a major challenger for a title match because they're hanging their hat on the Women's Money in the Bank match, and rightfully so. So I don't know. I'm with Sean where I do think that they can have a very good match. I mean, where Rhonda is at in the ring right now, I think Natty is a great opponent for her. I think that they can probably have a really solid match together. But, yeah, this angle has been a bit off the rails. And I think that was par for the course with all three women segment tonight. I mean, it just was not a good night for the women on SmackDown. I think that from a creative perspective, they were let down in a lot of ways. And that goes for all three of those segments, which were really back to back to back. I'm sure we'll get into the others, but
I mean, Ronda is, you know, as Becky said, a little weirdo, and her social awareness is a little off. And I think part of it is the delivery. I didn't know they were going at it on social media. I just am not always keeping up on what wrestlers are doing on social media. I rely on Rich Fan to catch me up on that on everything each week.
Really, it was very similar to what was said tonight. I mean, yeah. Just ruthless sort of like character attacks. I mean, it seemed very much, you know, like they were both in the know and having fun with
good.
It.
Well, and I feel good about that. But it doesn't change the fact that Ronda might have undercut her purpose, which is to get cheered, because you know you don't want to come across that out of proportion response to what Natalya did, especially because what Natalya did rang true. She didn't say she's a bad mom. She didn't say her baby's ugly. She didn't say her baby is unfortunate to have such weird parents. Like she just said you talk about being a mom too much. So I just thought, like a lot of times with Ronda, you know, the way she comes across isn't particularly likable, and you know, even with a pasted on smile. But man, I popped for the eye makeup and the baby carriage, and yeah, that was fun.
I felt like she kind of brought the carriage into the promo a little too late, though. Like it was out there for so long, and she's just kind of standing around it, and then all of a sudden, like it's the very tail end of her promo before Rhonda's cue, and she just starts rocking the stroller.
I thought she might have hurt Ronda the way she shoved that into her, and Ronda went down. I was like, okay, was that a shoot shove? You know, for going too far. I mean, whatever. Let's see. Well, let's go on to our next call here. Let's bring Kyle from Baltimore in. Kyle, good to hear from you. What'd you think of SmackDown tonight?
It happened. It was just there. I wasn't really, it was watching it. I was thinking to myself, like, God, Raw is so much better than SmackDown even more from what they're doing. I was just watching, because I was watching Raquel and all that. I like Raquel, but it's like just like short matches, and I kept thinking about what to do with Becky, what to do with Asuka and Liv and Alexa. The people from Raw is so much entertaining, and everything on Raw is entertaining, not just the women, just even what to do with Rollins and all them. It's so entertaining and SmackDown because of the star power. That's the bottom line to the entire situation with SmackDown, the lack of star power on the show. And I was thinking to myself, my God, Raw is so much better. And the quicker they put Becky in that match, the better, because it'll make the most sense to me. And all that stuff, I just think she's going to win anyway. But because I was watching, you know, from saying that she was going to be for next week, saying that you could have people from the Raw women on SmackDown, which is interesting, which I guess they decided to say, you know, we need something interesting on this show. Let's just bring the Raw women on SmackDown just to make it interesting. Let's not wait until next Saturday. Let's just do it next week on SmackDown, because we need something on this show to make it interesting. So I think that's what they're thinking, their thought was, because this was good. And Ronda Rousey as champ, Ronda and Bianca both, I said this last week about women are not good as champions. They're so lacking of being not good within their characters. I think Bianca should, at this point, should be a heel, because it'll probably work for her as a heel. Same thing as Ronda. I don't know if they're waiting for Charlotte to come back. I guess that's what they're going to plan on doing. They're planning on doing Charlotte and Ronda for SummerSlam and Becky and Bianca for SummerSlam. But what do you think about that? Because watching this was just so blech to me.
Brandon, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, with Ronda, there's definitely something lacking there. They it just hasn't connected well. And I don't know if that's because sort of the bloom is off the rose with Ronda on this second time around. I don't know if that's sort of her attitude, if it's people getting a peek behind the curtain, so to speak, and getting to know Ronda's personality a little bit better. I'm not sure. It could be a combination of a lot of things. And also she hasn't done herself any favors on the microphone for the most part. The in-ring work has been okay to good. I mean, I think she had a stronger run the first time around, but she's kind of getting her feet back underneath her here. I don't know how much better she will come off right now as a heel, because it does sort of feel like she's just a flat character. And I think that they need to get her in a hot program in order to really get her back to a place where she feels like a big star. And I'm not sure that the answer to that is even Charlotte Flair right now, because, I mean, they did it at WrestleMania, and while I thought the match was good, I don't think that at the end of the day it did much for either of them. So it's hard. It's hard with Charlotte. As for Bianca over on Raw, I do think that she has gotten the short end of the stick in a way. Despite being champion, the focus has been clearly on Becky Lynch, and Becky is doing some excellent character work, and that naturally sort of shifts her into the main focal point. I'm not ready to throw in the towel on Bianca yet. I think that she still has work to do, but I think that they can certainly salvage her as a babyface and continue down the path with her as a babyface champion. I just think that they need more challengers, and unfortunately, it's a conundrum that they face with the entire women's division, with the rosters on both shows being so thin, and what talent they do have has been undercut in a really big way, just by poor booking and you know, slotting them in positions that don't really make a lot of sense. So it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard for anyone to really rise above and stand out in a big way right now, because they're going to recycle a lot of programs.
Who is how deep is the women? Looking at the women on SmackDown, how long of a list is there of legit potential main eventers based on the reality of how they've been booked and their skill set up to this point? Because on the show, we had Natalya and Ronda Rousey, and Ronda's obviously a main eventer. We had Sonya Deville, Shayna Baszler, Xia Li, Lacey Evans, Raquel Gonzalez, Shotzi, and Tamina. I think that covers everyone. So, like, in that group, if you're telling, you know, WWE Creative, okay, this, if you're part of WWE Creative, let's focus on these top two or top four. Who do you like there, Brandon, for that? And then I'll actually ask Kyle too after that.
On SmackDown?
Yeah. Yeah. So the women who are on SmackDown tonight specifically.
Sure. Okay. So, I mean, that kind of goes back to my comment earlier, where I thought the women had a really weak night, and that a lot of that is due to the booking, which I think failed them pretty big, especially in that handicap match. I like Sonya Deville of that group, and I like the idea of trying her out as a babyface. I know that it's going to be tough given how her character was presented when she was an authority figure, but I think that Sonya has come into her own as a talker, and I think that she can have a really good match with the right opponent at this point. So if it were up to me, I think she would be my choice to elevate of the group. I think WWE is clearly eyeing Lacey Evans and Raquel. I don't see it with either of them. I think they've tried that path with Lacey Evans, and we saw with her return, you know, just how convoluted it became and how poorly they sort of handled that. She doesn't really seem to be connecting all that well. Raquel right now is generic. There's not much else to say about it. I mean, they're really just presenting her as someone who smiles all the time, and I don't think that that's a character that is going to really get over all that well. So it's tough sledding. I mean, if you look, I'm looking at the roster right now, and they do not have much there. I mean, I'd love to say, you know, run with Shayna Baszler, but it feels like the ship has sailed there, and they have done a ton of damage to Shotzi. Tamina is certainly not someone you want to build a division around or elevate to a main event level. they seem to have grown bored with Xia Li already. So yeah, the options are slim.
Yeah. Kyle, who would, if you had to pick from that list, other than Ronda Rousey, three women to really get behind and push, because you would enjoy it, but two, you think that it would resonate with fans and draw money. Who would you pick?
I think we're off the bat, it'll be Raquel. As of right now, she's been booked pretty well so far. She's been, you know, and is it smiling annoying? Not to me. I'm okay with it for now. I want to see her in a major feud with someone. That has to be Ronda, to see how she really is with Ronda one-on-one within feud with her at this point. So I would have to say Raquel. Until Charlotte comes back, I'd say Charlotte by default because I know she'll be back soon. And that's really just about it. Shayna doesn't matter. Xia Li should mean a lot more, I would think. And, you know, Aaliyah doesn't mean anything. Shashi doesn't mean anything. They tried to do something with Lacey Evans, but I just don't see it. They tried out once when she grew with Becky. It wasn't going to work then. With her new character now, I do like her new look. I think it's a better look than it was in 2019, and her way she is in the ring. But it still doesn't really feel that interesting. So, yeah, I just go back to the people that you just care about. Is I would think will be Ronda and Raquel, as far as I'm, you know, and I guess Charlotte because I know she'll be back. So I guess it'll be them three that they care about.
Yeah. I mean, that's an easy call with Charlotte, but I think the tougher call is do you stick with Lacey as a face or as a heel? Do you get behind Sonya Deville? Do you not rehabilitate, but kind of get a little more oomph behind Shayna Baszler? Xia Li, they kind of gave up on too quickly. I feel like it's a guilty pleasure and I could regret it over time, but Shotzi does something for me. I think she's a genuinely agitating heel. And the type of person fans would boo. There's sort of an intensity to her and a bravado leaning in on her confidence, as Theory said Vince McMahon told him to do. She kind of leans in on her confidence almost more than you think she should for her seniority and accomplishments, which I think goes just far enough to not disqualify her from a push, but rather just get her heel heat. So I'm guardedly optimistic about Shotzi.
Yeah, well, going back to Shayna, for Shayna, I think she's just been damaged goods from her feud with Becky. She didn't feel like a top star from that time when she headed to WrestleMania. She just lost to a pregnant Becky Lynch at that time. So it's, you know, they didn't care. They clearly didn't care enough about putting the title on her, even though Becky advocates for her to do it, but the company didn't want her to. So it's just, and they still haven't seen her as a top star even to this day. So it's like she doesn't even really matter as she felt like when she was in NXT. So it's just, I don't know. It's just not working. And I don't know. It's just they need to redo SmackDown all together because the women's division is a problem. Roman Reigns not being around is a problem. The champion itself not being around. I did like what Rollins done on Monday. I need to have the championship on. He went to win a briefcase to take the title because that really doesn't need to happen. At least Raw interesting for a world champion. And that's right. You know, that's the only lacking of that. But yeah, yep. With Roman Reigns,
so what
and that it's all that. I don't get it. So I guess that's my call.
Okay, cool. Brandon, you want to react to any of that? Thanks, Kyle.
I was just going to say, help me with how they went about that handicap match tonight, because I'm sitting there watching this and wondering how is this going to help any of these three women who they really need right now, given that the roster is so thin. You have Sonya Deville, who is supposed to be the heel, but she's placed in a sympathetic position by being in a two-on-one handicap match, so much so that Michael Cole is forced to commentate the match like she's the babyface and actually give Xia Li and Shayna Baszler credit for interfering on Sonya Deville's behalf to make it a fair fight. And then you've got Lacey Evans, who has been turned how many times since her mm-hmm. promo started? I mean, yeah. three, four? Like, I lost count. And Raquel, who, I mean, really, we haven't been given a genuine reason to cheer for yet. I mean, she had the confrontation with Ronda, and they came out, you know, showing signs of respect to one another, but Ronda isn't a strong babyface herself, so that doesn't necessarily send the signal for the crowd to cheer Raquel. So it's just this confusing, convoluted mess with the roles completely flipped. How does anybody come out of that thing any better?
Oh, I think this was meant to be Adam Pearce got upset with what Sonya was saying about him, and that he had a, you know, mediocre wrestling career, and he's taking it out, and he's, you know, all these insults, and he just overreacted and put her in a two-on-one match. And I think the psychology is fans are supposed to be happy that Sonya is now going to get beat up by two women in a two-on-one match because she was so mean to Adam Pearce. But Adam Pearce isn't, I mean, he's relatable as this middle management who's always just, oh, God, just always caught between a rock and a hard place and all that. I mean, he's a sympathetic character, but I don't think people are going to rally around him in a feud with Sonya. So, yeah, I mean, it was a confusing move to do that. And, I mean, I'm trying to think, like, how you could book your way or you know, tell a story that would even things out. I mean, honestly, you could have had Raquel, like, grab the mic ahead of time or Lacey and Raquel could have talked, and Raquel goes, Lacey, doesn't take two of us to beat Sonya. Let's do rock, paper, scissors, and whoever wins gets to take her out tonight, gets to beat her up tonight. And they do rock, paper, scissors, and then it just goes one-on-one, and the baby faces are cool about not – because it makes Lacey and Raquel look bad for being like, yeah, two-on-one, you know. So I guess my way out of it would have been rock, paper, scissors, but then when Shayna and Xia Li are interfering on behalf of Sonya, that's when whoever lost rock, paper, scissors – is the equalizer at ringside, so they still get some TV time. I guess, to me, that would be the tweak or the overhaul, depending on your perspective, that would have helped it make more sense.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you're essentially asking the crowd to side with the babyfaces who have an unfair advantage in as a you know, homage to the relatability of Adam Pearce. And I just don't think that is for starters, that's not something you should be booking for, because Adam Pearce should not be the focal point of any segment. He's there to not get in the way and just make the matches. And lately, it's like he has been a focal point of bad decision-making.
All right. By the way, I texted someone at WWE, I don't book too often, and asked about the Natalya Ronda stuff. He said his impression is that they are not friends anymore because of what you cited on social media.
And that
Ronda is like legit worked up over this and that things got out of hand on social media. And that what I read tonight, you know, and I've been wrong before when people have just been good actors. You know, Miz and Daniel Bryan had me asking people, was that legit? You know, on the Talking Smack Raw Talk thing. But I'm told, and maybe they're working people, but that Ronda was like coming across and as legit pissed at Natalya. And then I think about Natalya shoving the stroller at Ronda and how hard Ronda went down. And it makes me intrigued with and a little nervous about what happens in their singles match if Ronda doesn't cool down between now and then.
The thing is that, like, you can, it's sort of one of those things where you see it happen and you see it unfolding on social media, and you can easily see how, oh yeah, they're friends, they're playing this up, they have an agreement to go at each other as hard as they possibly can. But knowing that it's Ronda Rousey, when you then hear that she's legitimately really pissed off, you're like, oh yeah, that makes total sense too.
I know. Yep. I mean, it's kind of how I felt about Rock and Cena, where they're, you know, Rock's like, oh, John, yeah, just bring it on, you know, like in a patronizing way. And John's like, okay, Dwayne, I will. And then, you know, Dwayne Johnson had too much pride to go, hey, Cena, lighten up a little bit. You're going a little, you're a little too effective, and I'm a little rusty. And so it just turned into, you know, a bit of a weekly thrashing from my perspective that I think surprised and shocked a lot of people. So, but yeah, Ronda is unique. But yeah, I wasn't necessarily expecting that answer, but I decided it was worth asking, and I got a pretty definitive impression. So, yeah, interesting. Okay, so thank you, Kyle, for the call. I want to cover the Gunther Ricochet IC title match and your thoughts on Ricochet's title reign. We got to talk some SmackDown with you, Brandon, and it felt like they were touting him in a way that felt like, hey, he's our answer to a lot of what AEW is doing. If we want to win over some AEW fans, we want to have a smaller athlete who we tout for his athleticism and give him some wins, give him a title run, rehabilitate the Intercontinental title and him at the same time, which I thought was working okay. I still argue Ricochet's charisma and mic work is a legitimate impediment. That's the word I'm looking for. Impediment. I knew there was a word out there. A legitimate impediment to him really being able to be pushed at the level that people who just look for pure athleticism want. And the reality is WWE is not going to push someone who can't cut promos better than him. And you know, if I were him and I wanted to make a lot of money, I'd have been practicing really hard all these years at promos. And maybe he has, and it just didn't work out well. Sorry, Ricochet. But all that said, you can push someone and get them over without that. It's just WWE isn't likely to do it. So I was for his push, even if I was a little skeptical that it would really take hold in a WWE environment where you sell your matches and personality on promos. So then Gunther comes in, and it's like, should it be competitive? Should this be a long feud? Or should Gunther just, like, destroy him and squash him because he's one of their few undamped, you know, like, he hasn't been defined down as a rising star who could be built, who could be put against any top-tier wrestler. You know, a match with Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, Drew McIntyre all feel on the table if you don't do anything to diminish him. So he should beat Ricochet pretty decisively, but does it have to be like, you know, a squash like Omos beating up some people? And I wasn't sure, you know, I was kind of torn on that. It was somewhat competitive last week. We're not going to bury Ricochet, but it's clear who's better. This week was more definitive. And again, I find myself not disagreeing with it, even if I have some mixed feelings. So where are you on that, Brandon?
Yeah, I think I'm in a similar camp. I was cautiously optimistic about pushing Ricochet because it seemed like he had been defined down to a point that it would be really, really hard to bounce back from unless they were willing to put the full force of their weight behind him. And clearly that they were never going to do that, nor do I think he really rose to the level of deserving that. I think that, like you, I find Ricochet to be lacking in areas that are very important in WWE. And I think that there is a ceiling for him, and I think that ceiling is justified for the most part. So I thought the Intercontinental title was a good landing spot for him if they were going to try to get him back on track. It didn't help, of course, that the Intercontinental title hasn't really meant a ton for quite a long time. I mean, we famously had the Shinsuke Nakamura run where he didn't defend the title for what was it, like 6 or 7 months? So that title has had some issues over the course of the last year or so. So it wasn't in a great spot. I don't think that putting it on Ricochet elevated him or the title, which is the situation you don't want happening. I mean, you certainly want one of the two things to happen. And I don't think they got either there. I mean, he had a couple okay matches out of it, but when you have someone like Gunther come along and you realize that you definitely have something in him, but you're not quite ready to push him to world title level yet. And of course, being a heel, it would be hard to match him up to Roman Reigns right now. I think that the writing is on the wall for a guy like Ricochet, who, yes, they wanted to sort of elevate him in terms of with the lack of depth they had on the SmackDown side for the babyface roster. It was important to them to elevate him temporarily. But I think at the end of the day, Gunther is important enough and has enough promise to spend what little cachet they built for Ricochet on getting Gunther a couple of really strong wins and just moving on. And I don't know if that means that Ricochet just you know, falls back down the ladder to where he was prior to the Intercontinental title run, I think that there could be more for him than that. And I think that given how thin the roster is, they should utilize him more than that. But I don't think that this was the wrong move. I think that establishing Gunther as a strong heel champion against your former champion is a good idea.
All right. By the way, is Gunther on course to be a WrestleMania main eventer? Like, is this act and in-ring and look and everything have that potential?
I don't know. Is he too British? I mean, really, like I always question any foreign character as whether or not Vince McMahon would be willing to really get behind them long term as a major character, unless for some reason the United States is in conflict with Britain soon. And then I guess,
I will say it would go Austria with him, not Britain.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, I mean, if we suddenly are at war with Austria, then yeah. I guess he becomes a prime candidate to become a major player. But I don't know. I mean, like it seems like he could be, only in the sense right now that he's one of the few characters on the show who is booked strong. Like they actually have plans for him. So in that respect, you could certainly see him rising up the card, but it's so hard to get a read on Vince's proclivities from one day to the next and whether or not he's going to sour on someone. I mean, Gunther is in a position right now that is not all that dissimilar to someone like Rusev, who was in a really prominent role as this big foreign heel. And, you know, Vince got bored. He saw him as a comedic character for a bit there, and Rusev fell down the card. I mean, the same thing could happen. But you know, by the opposite token, I mean he could wind up being a perennial main eventer.
All right. I got to ask, what do you think of Shanky's dancing, Brandon, and where we're headed? Does this have a chance to be what Vince McMahon hopes, which is that kind of sidebar comedy character where he's looking at crowd and there's dads and sons yucking it up and there's a kid dancing like Shanky and smiling and Vince is saying, I bring smiles to people's faces. That's what this is all about. Is this one of those things? Is it going to fall short of even that standard? And yeah. And are we going to get a Jinder Shanky match sooner than later?
I think we'll definitely get the Jinder Shanky match. I don't know that people will be all that interested in seeing it, but I think we're going to get it. It seems definitely to be headed down that course. I don't know if they're going to try to pair Shanky with New Day for a bit to try to get him over, or if they're just going to branch him out on his own and let him be this dancing character that maybe dances with Samantha at ringside every once in a while. I don't know. Do you get the sense that the crowd is into it, or that they're more sort of like, almost like they're accepting of the joke, but it's on a short leash?
I think people attending SmackDown are a little more into it than people who hate this gimmick want to admit. But I don't think it's much beyond this like sort of like, oh, isn't that adorable, but don't take up a lot of my time, please. Like, yeah. I think that's sort of the ceiling, but I don't think there's like among people who are going to SmackDown, the majority, I think they know what the WWE product is. This is part of the mix that's going to, you know, I mean, you know, we had, look at how fast Braun Strowman can run, you know, like they're just weird things Vince gets in his head and it becomes a thing. And obviously Shanky dancing became something he got a little infatuated with and he's rolling with it. I don't think WWE fans are hostile towards it, but I don't think they want a big dose of it. And I think it's, you know, you can quote me on this in 3 years when Shanky's main eventing WrestleMania, but this does not seem to be a commitment to building him up, as a big deal. And maybe they're just understand that probably isn't likely to happen.
I would hope not. I would hope that someone who they have big hopes for is not someone that they're presenting as, you know, this kind of this dancing act. I feel like this is something that would fit in well in the 24/7 division. Like if they yeah. wanted to keep it around, they wanted to keep him around in this gimmick, and they thought that they could get a rise out of the crowd with it. I mean, it's not something that I guess would be all that harmful to have him dancing around with the 24/7 title or chasing after the 24/7 title and dancing while he does it. Like, it fits into that sort of that niche of the WWE product. So if this is a way to extend that to SmackDown, then, you know, I would prefer to be without it. I mean, I think Raw gets away with the 24/7 shenanigans because they have that extra hour. But at the same time, again, the roster is so thin. They've got to use everybody that they've got, and this is what we get.
All right, so Money in the Bank took shape more tonight. We got Lacey Evans, Alexa Bliss, Liv Morgan, Shotzi and Asuka. I'm getting head on Asuka and combined them. That can be their if they become a couple. Never mind.
Or Shotzka. Shotzka of attack.
Yes, there we go. Yep. Shotzi, Asuka, and Raquel Rodriguez. As the six entrants already with one more. There's seven in the match. Is that right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's seven in both matches. Why seven?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what – let's see. Seth, Sheamus, Drew, Omos, Sammy, and two more. Yeah, seven. So any thoughts on who the seventh one is? Is it obvious and it'll get – you know, it'll happen on Raw Monday, or is this a case of maybe Bayley returning or Charlotte returning?
It feels like it's got to be Becky. I mean, I guess I just all along have assumed that it would be Becky, that she'd weasel her way in somehow. But they could also make it a compelling story out of her continuing to go down this like this path of craziness and not being able to get in. I think that's sort of equally entertaining from the heel character perspective. But the match could really use her. I mean, I don't think they – Pat McAfee said it was an absolutely stacked or something along those lines a lineup for the Women's Money in the Bank match, and I don't see it that way. I mean, you've got Liv Morgan in there, who has certainly been defined down. Asuka, they've done a decent job at building back up. I mean, Alexa Bliss is certainly a strong name in that division, and having recently returned, she hasn't really like. She hasn't really merged into traffic yet, so she stands out a bit. But, I mean, Raquel and Lacey Evans, they're not strong characters quite yet in their own right. So I think they need a big name in there. And if that's Becky Lynch, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Right.
If it's a returning Bayley, sure. I mean, that certainly helps the match a great deal. And then, of course, there's Charlotte, too. I mean, you certainly could throw Charlotte in there. I would think it's got to be one of the three, right? Like they're not going to save it for one of these other women who aren't a major part of the roster. I'm looking through here. I mean, we've got Aaliyah. It's not going to be Aaliyah. We've got Naomi and Sasha Banks still on the SmackDown roster. Interesting.
Wow. And WWE.com?
Yeah.
Wow.
So Shayna Baszler, doesn't seem like it'll be her. Sonya Deville, Xia Li. So it seems like you can probably pretty safely rule all of them out. Over on Raw, we're looking at Carmella's got the title match, so not going to be her. Dana Brooke certainly won't be her. Doudrop, have we seen Doudrop in a while? Doudrop's with Nikki Cross or Nikki ASH.
Yep.
So Liv Morgan's already in the match. Queen Zelina, she's been MIA for a bit. That's it. That's all of them. So
I wonder if they'll do a last chance match either on Raw Monday or SmackDown on Friday you know, like a gauntlet, and then that's when, you know, either Becky pulls it out or
right.
Charlotte returns or Bayley returns and we see that. On the men's side,
if this obviously is predicated on Charlotte or Bayley being ready to return and available. But I think from a storyline perspective, if they can keep Becky Lynch out of the match, I think it's a stronger story. Just because she'll be so great at selling the injustice of being left out of the Money in the Bank match. I mean, the match will be better with her in it, But if they have someone of comparable star power that they can slot in there and keep her out just for the story they can tell, I think that's the way to go.
Yeah. Okay, so on the men's side, Sheamus and Drew are in this. Is Drew the favorite because he's the one, he's talking about it. It feels like if Seth did it, yes, he talked about having Roman's number, so he's got to be a legit contender. Sheamus intrigues me. You know, if this is a pass to him being a babyface, I like Sheamus against Roman as a feud, so I'm not against that. Omos shouldn't win it. He shouldn't cash in. He can't, you know, get to the ring quick enough to surprise anyone, and it would be premature and damaging to his character because fans would push back. So I say no to that. Sammy is intriguing. You know, would he? Because we talk about Sheamus being a babyface. I think a potential breakout, like difference maker in the way that somebody can be a difference maker in WWE in 2022, not Stone Cold, you know,
sure.
Breakout star. But I think Sammy can be a difference maker in terms of how people feel about a TV show, a roster, paying money to go to a show if Sammy becomes a babyface. Now, I think he's good enough in the ring. He can be credible and kind of flip the switch, not be a goof anymore, but still have a lot of personality. And so winning Money in the Bank and then saying he's not going to cash in, but then ultimately cashing in, I think the crowd would pop for that moment. I think he could become a champion and surprise people, and they could tell that story. He's good. He's better than we expected. And McAfee can say that's because he's not subservient to the bloodline. This is a super talented guy, and he's not worried about conspiracies anymore, and he's focused, and he's been like, you know, 8 years ago he was this good. We thought he'd be this good. You know, can just reframe the story. WWE does that with talent. And I think he's talented enough. Not everybody is, but talented enough to elevate himself into the top tier and be that baby face that we thought, if we watched the trajectory of his career, that a lot of us thought he could be at a Bryan Danielson level when Sammy was in NXT and working his way up. So unrealistic, too optimistic, delusional, or intriguing, and yeah. What do you think, Brendan?
I think it might be too optimistic for WWE, but it is super intriguing. I'm a big fan of Sami Zayn. I think that it's interesting because when Sami Zayn was in NXT and he became this lovable underdog, it was hard to picture him ever being a heel. I mean, the guy was just so incredibly likable and relatable and over as a babyface. And then he spends some time in WWE and he kind of goes around in circles and is sort of on the undercard and not very well utilized. Suddenly he turns heel and though he's losing, you know, most of his matches, he clearly becomes a favorite of Vince McMahon because of how regularly he's featured and how many different roles he's trusted to be in. So once you're in that position, you know, you have some room to move up the card if Vince is that trusting with you. I think we've seen it with both Sami Zayn and both Kevin Owens, and they've both been rewarded with very lucrative contracts for their contributions during the Thunderdome era and the PC era. I think that they've both proven to be invaluable to WWE and on their respective brands, they are talent that is featured consistently and heavily every single week, more so than almost anyone else. So Sami Zayn is intriguing because now that he's been heel for so long, you almost can't imagine him being babyface again. And so you have to sort of think back to that run in NXT and how good he was to remember how much of a great underdog he can play. And against a character like Roman Reigns, who is so dominant and who so easily could flip a crowd into cheering for Sami Zayn, given how, first of all, how much larger he is than Zayn and how his body language will be able to sell that Zayn isn't even in his league, that Zayn cannot compete on his level, that it is an insult to even consider Sami Zayn as a proper challenger for his world title. I think they can sell that. And I don't think that it would be all that hard for the crowd to get behind Zayn in a way that they did back in NXT. So, yeah, I think it's a super, super intriguing matchup and direction to take. I also – that is the sort of – to me, that's the outlier. That is the little bit off the wall idea that would be really fun and really interesting to see. Drew McIntyre seems like the cut and dry answer, and a really good answer too. I don't want to take away anything from Drew, because I think if he wins Money in the Bank, you know, that's a good direction to take. And I think the path forward there is very clear. I mean, Drew is probably not going to cash in unannounced on Reigns. He is likely going to stake his claim for the pay-per-view. What is it? Clash at the Castle? Is that what it's called?
It sounds good if it's not. No, I think it is.
Yeah. So the pay-per-view over there, I think that, I mean, it seems clear to me that that's what he does. He just says, you know, I'm cashing in at Clash of the Castle, period. He calls his shot, and we have the match. And I think that works. I mean, I think it's a way to elevate Drew quickly, get him back in the spotlight, and get him in a huge match in front of a crowd that is certainly going to be very sympathetic toward him.
Brandon, anything else in your notes from SmackDown tonight you want to bring up?
That just to add on to what I thought was a really weak night for the women's division. I did not think that Tamina Shotzi match was particularly strong, and it was coming off the back of those two really tough segments. So a rough night for that women's division for sure.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Cool. Brandon, you'll be covering pay-per-views this weekend and next weekend for PW.
Yeah, two back to back. Again, we had it last month as well with Double or Nothing followed immediately by Hell in a Cell. This is an interesting slate. I mean, Money in the Bank is shaping up to be fascinating. I think that it should be a solid show. I think it definitely has. Definitely has a chance to outperform Hell in a Cell overall. And then on the AEW side, man, Forbidden Door is one of those things that is fascinating for a number of reasons. I have been very, very critical of AEW booking as of late, and the way that they have incorporated New Japan. And I think that this is going to probably be a very well-wrestled show that is fun to watch, but is likely in the end very inconsequential.
All right, very good. Thank you, Brandon. Good touching base with you again and talking some SmackDown.
Yeah, absolutely. It was fun to come back to SmackDown, and look forward to covering those two shows coming up here. And yeah.
Excellent. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today, and we will talk to you next time.